Hello, my dear friend. Welcome back to another episode of the Curious Neuron Podcast. My name is Cindy Hovington and I am your host. Today we are going to, we're going to mess things up a little bit in our brains. I've been reading a book that I'm not done yet. I'm almost done, but I just didn't want to wait to have this discussion with you. And I hope the title of this episode was enough to kind of get you in and kind of curious about it. What if, so this is the question we're asking ourselves today. What if the word anxiety didn't exist? We're going to, you know, stretch that out a little bit. What if the word anger didn't exist? What if the word sadness didn't exist? The reason why we are exploring this is because I've been reading Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett's book, How Emotions Are Made. And a lot of what she talks about falls within what we say here at Curious Neuron and what I've been talking about for years. But she puts things into these really beautiful concepts that I think we should be talking about. So here's what we're going to talk about today. There's going to be two really important take-home messages, maybe more than one, but we're going to talk about how we have a lot more control over emotions, you know, than we believe or we might realize. And that falls back on emotion regulation skills. So that's what I mean by it touches on things that we talk about, but we're going to look at it in a different way. And then we've spoken about this before where there's this body brain connection. We've talked about, we've had a researcher here from UCLA, I think 2 years ago now, or maybe even three, where we spoke about the gut and we spoke about the brain and mental health and gut health. I'm actually having that researcher back on this season. So, you know, I think it's an important topic to discuss, but Lisa Feldman Barrett talks about body budget, and I just love this concept so much. And I think it's going to help you guys understand yourselves a lot more and how you process emotions, how you cope with emotions. And hopefully after today's episode, you're going to feel empowered and waiting and ready for the next emotional event to happen and be like, I got this. Let's go. Yeah. So that's the hope I have. But before we begin, as always, I've been asking you this every episode and it's because it's just that important. Can you please take a moment to rate or review, on 5 stars, the podcast? The more you do that, and if you're not subscribed, make sure you press on that subscribed button wherever you are listening to, whether it's on Spotify. You don't want to just like randomly come back to Curious Neuron. You want to make sure you're subscribed because that lets the algorithm know that you are interested in the podcast and it boosts us on these charts that exist. And when that happens, I send in the metrics so that we get funding for the podcast, and I want to continue to be supported by the amazing organizations that I'm supported by. So the Tannenbaum Open Science Institute at the Neuro here in Montreal, and also the McConnell Foundation. I'm so grateful that there are these two organizations that support the fact that I share science with you guys. So please, let's say thank you to them. And let's continue this podcast because I would be so sad if I couldn't. But please take a moment to at least subscribe and rate. And if you have a little bit of extra time, leave a review, please. And send me an email. Let me know that you're here, that you exist, that I'm talking to you. Send me an email at info@curiousneuron.com and I will write back to you. Sometimes it takes me a little bit of time, but I do write back to everybody that sends in an email. And I just want to know who you are and why you listen to this podcast. What do you want to hear more of? What do you want to hear less of? You want me to stop making jokes? Then I will. Well, whatever it is. I don't make a lot of jokes, but you know, be honest with me and criticize me if you want. I will do the best that I can. All right. So let's jump into today's topic. I'm really excited about this. So this book called How Emotions Are Made is a heavier book. I think it's like 700 pages, but it's been so good. And my kids are laughing at me because I sit there and I read a page and then you see me thinking and I'm like processing this information. I do think that we're going to share this information because it really helps us rethink how we perceive emotions. I don't know if you see it as a way where we're kind of hardwired with these emotions. So let's start with that first concept, right? Where I said that emotions are constructed. And this reminds us, about the importance of the environment, our past experiences. So what she means by that is you know, you're in a certain situation, and we are going to a certain extent construct the emotion that we're going to experience in that very moment. And the construction of this emotion is based on our sensory input, which is why more and more now, the more we understand emotions, which we're not even close to, but we're getting there. We're starting to understand what it looks like in the brain. That sensory piece is something we've been hearing a lot more. And even for me as a 40-year-old, I was never thinking about this in my 30s in terms of like the impact that the sensory world around me will have on my emotions. So we construct our emotions based on the sensory input that our system is getting, based on past experiences, which is why our childhood matters. We cannot ignore that. And our cultural, differences or influences. These three aspects are what will construct that emotion in that moment. So just have a thought, like think of the last emotional moment that you experienced and think about, you know, how you felt in that moment and what was coming into your system. If we see our emotions as, you know, being constructed, then we're aware that there are so many variables that impact how we feel in that moment. And this is something that I've personally been trying to, you know, share with parents, because I think it's important that we don't see it as my child did or said something and that made me mad. There's a lot more to it than just that. Even the word stress. Whenever a parent tells me or a friend says, I'm so stressed, I'm stressed, I'm stressed about this, I'm stressed about that, I ask them to change the word. If you didn't have the word stressed, which word would you use? And just trying to use other words that allow us to describe a little bit more, right? Like, I'm feeling overwhelmed by the sound around me or the noise around me or the fact that my kids have been, you know, if you have a newborn and you have a toddler in the home, you might feel overwhelmed from a sensory perspective by the end of your day. You might feel overwhelmed from an auditory perspective, right? There's a lot of noise. Your past experiences. So if you have a toddler that's whining or yelling at you or ignoring you, past experiences lead to the brain, and Dr. Feldman Barrett really explains this well in her book. The brain is based or functions on predictions. So, you know, I've had some conversations with people who feel like I don't need to tap into my childhood. That's ridiculous. You know, like I am who I am today. I've made the decisions. I am okay with who I am today. I don't need to go back into the past. And to a certain extent, maybe not. However, if you're in a situation where you're like, I don't understand why I react this way in certain emotional experiences, well, then maybe there's a reason why. And maybe our brain subconsciously is making certain predictions that we're not even aware of. And if we're not aware of these predictions, that's why we say we go from 0 to 100. We're not aware of what is happening in between, and it's unconscious, and they're based on predictions. And then we just yell and we lose it and we feel rage and we lose our minds and we feel guilty after. So we do have to be aware of our past experiences, because even if we're not aware of it, it might be leading to us reacting in a way with partners, with friends, with colleagues, with our kids. And when this happens, well, then that's why we, you know, respond a certain way or react a certain way rather than responding to our child. We lose control. So keeping that phrase in our mind that we construct our emotions based on sensory input, past experiences, and cultural influences, it just reminds us how much is playing into the moment that we are experiencing when we feel something, and so many things that we're just not even aware of or we're not conscious of. Cultural influences. I think this is really important. So let's go back to the title, right? So what if the word anxiety didn't exist? What if the word sad or mad didn't exist? Well, there's this belief in part of the science that, you know, if I look at a face and the face has, you know, the frown on and they look sad, well, I'll know right away that this person looks sad. But there are cultural differences, and I might perceive that face as sad. You might perceive it as bored. Somebody else might perceive it as slightly mad or confused or scared. And there's so much variability in how we perceive emotions. I remember when I was defending my PhD, that was one of the questions. So I was studying emotions, and one of the scientists on the panel for my PhD defense said, would your study results have been the same if they had been performed in China? And the answer was no, probably not, because emotions there are perceived differently than they are here. And so it might not have, the output of the results would have been different. That's a given for sure. So we do have to take into consideration our cultural differences and influences. Now, going back to the word, I might, I don't know, explain to my kids what anxiety is or anger or sadness in a certain way, where a different culture might explain it very differently than I would. So that means that if I am experiencing anger, but somebody from a different culture who was raised in an environment where anger was described differently, we might be labeling it as anger, but having different experiences. And we need to think about this because, again, going back to that word stress, right? Like stress might mean something different between you and I, but we label everything as being stressful, right? We kind of like put that word everywhere. Throw it out. I mean, not put it everywhere, but throw it out. And we have to remind ourselves that it's very different. So let's go back to the fact that now we are parents and we have to teach our kids how to cope with emotions, understand emotions. Well, why are we placing so much emphasis, and this is something I wish that wouldn't exist, or that there'd be more context to it, these sort of preschool posters that I have in my mind right now with the happy, sad, the mad face, the scared face, the bored face, or whatever it is. I don't think they have bored. But if you are an educator listening to this, what I would love for preschools to have is a lot more context. When it comes to those faces, what does that emotion feel like for you in your body? How would you describe that emotion in your body? And we recently had a conversation with Dr. Mark Brackett, who has this really beautiful layout of emotions, which is based on science. And that's about being pleasant or unpleasant and high energy or low energy. Going back to today's title, what if the word anxiety didn't exist? What if we couldn't use that word to label what we were experiencing in that moment? And all we had were the words pleasant or unpleasant, high energy or low energy. Then we would probably say, if we were about to give a presentation in front of 1,000 people, I'm experiencing a lot of unpleasantness inside my body. I can feel my heart thumping. I can feel my stomach churning, or it's in knots. And I have a lot of energy at the same time because I'm about to go on stage and there's, 1,000 people right in front of me, and I feel like throwing up. I feel my palms sweating, whatever it is. We would describe the scenario much more efficiently and understand our body in that moment a lot better. Rather, what we tend to do is throw out the label. I'm anxious. I'm mad. I'm sad. I'm happy. But most of us, I would argue, don't really know the feeling in our body, or we're not really attuned. We're not really mindful of that. And if we can just focus on, is this a pleasant feeling or unpleasant? Am I feeling high energy right now or really low energy? Back to Dr. Mark Brackett's work. But applying this with the concept of Dr. Lisa Feldman-Barrett's work, where we construct emotions, then we would build, in my opinion, these really beautiful moments where we connect with ourselves in that moment. We connect with what's happening inside our body, and we connect with what we need right now, right? So if I'm having lots of high energy right now, I know I need to let it go somehow. I'm going to get on that stage, and I know I'm feeling these really unpleasant emotions. what do I do when I have unpleasant emotions? I might talk to somebody about it. I might do some jumping jacks, get that energy out. I don't know. But it would be different for everybody, and we would know that. And then we would just do what our body needs in that moment, right? Our body, and that's going to, you know, segue into my second part of this talk, which is about body budget. Lisa in her book talks about, she uses this word body budget, and the way that you can perceive or understand this is the brain's prediction. It's the body budget is the brain's prediction and management system, right? So it's, this is for our body's energy resources. We don't have an unlimited amount of energy and resources. It's not unlimited. So our body, our brain has to allocate the right resources to the right places. So think about standing in the jungle and all of a sudden a tiger shows up right in front of you. At that moment, your brain is going to determine, where does this energy need to go in Cindy's body? And I guarantee you it's going to go towards my legs. It's going to pump my blood. It's going to, you know, give me more oxygen. And that's the fight or flight. And once that happens, I'm ready to run as fast as I've ever run before. I'm going to run really, although I don't run fast. But just to say, your body is going to allocate the right amount of energy in the right spot. And it's not, this is not just for running away from a tiger. Our body budget is our financial manager, right? So we're going to put a little bit in this account, a little bit in that account, a little bit in this other account. And it's the same thing for our brain and our body. They are so connected. So if we are just sitting down doing some work, then our body or our body budget is going to say, well, Cindy needs to continue breathing. So I'm going to allocate a few of those resources to breathing, and her heart needs to keep pumping. And well, maybe she just ate a sandwich after lunch. So I actually have to allocate some of those resources to digestion. The same thing applies for our emotional responses. When we're experiencing these emotional responses, when we're feeling something, this unpleasantness or pleasant, a pleasant feeling, that's high energy. I'm excited for the talk. I'm excited, I don't know, to, why can't I think of something? I'm excited to go play in the snow. We just got like 2 feet of snow this week. You know, whatever it is, then I'm going to allocate, my brain is going to allocate the right energy where it belongs in my body. But when it comes to emotions, I think we tend to forget that it needs some of our resources. But wait, we don't realize it in the moment. But if I tell you right now, when you are feeling tired and stressed, let's just use those two. Now, I could throw in hungry, but let's just say, if you are tired and you are stressed because of something happening at work, do you have the same amount of resources or energy or patience to deal with your child? Probably the answer is no. The answer for me is no. That is because we've already allocated so many of our resources to other things. If there's always an underlying feeling that is unpleasant, aka anxiety, then our body is constantly allocating the resources to what it needs for maintaining that, like for that feeling, that emotional experience that we're under. So when it comes to patience with our kids, when it comes to the energy to go for a walk or exercise, but we've been anxious or feeling stressed all day and our body has allocated the resources, extra resources to feeling, staying awake, breathing, our heart rate, digestion, whatever it is, there is nothing left at the end of the day when we see our kids. And that's when it becomes very difficult. So you know that I've been talking about, you know, addressing your needs. And if you didn't get your hands on my new workbook, I said last episode that it was going to be, or the first episode of the year, that my the reflective parent workbook would be 50 pages. Well, I kept working on it and I kept having a lot of ideas. So it's actually 100 pages, 101. But all this to say, I wanted to make sure that you were able to reflect through 9 different events that you might experience, whether it's arguing with your partner, whether it's work-life balance, whether it's addressing your needs. I wanted to make sure that you had ample reflection prompts and activities to walk you through nurturing your emotional well-being, which is why I ended up with 100 pages. But you could click the link in the show notes or visit kirsnaron.com or send me an email if you can't find it. The Reflective Parent Workbook is now available at Curious Neuron Academy. It is $29.99. But if you send me a screenshot of a review, not a rating, you need to leave a review on Spotify. No, I don't think you can on Spotify. On Apple. Or if you listen through Spotify and you can't leave a review, then post the podcast in your stories on Instagram and tag me. I will give you $10 off the Reflective Parent Workbook just to thank you, because that's how important it is. I really need those ratings. Okay. So like I was saying, how do we get to the reflective parent? Oh yeah. So it really is important for you to think about how your body and how your brain is allocating certain resources to your body. Because by the end of the day, if we don't address our needs, right? Our needs being sensory needs, perhaps psychological, if there's a past that we need that is, you know, a trauma or even just past experiences that impact us, anything that is impacting us in that moment, then of course we have nothing left for our kids. And it's really important for us to think about this. So knowing that emotions are constructed by the brain based on predictions, we truly need to take into account our body budget. We need to anticipate the energy that it takes to process emotions and not ignore them. So this is what my hope is for you, my dear friend, this week. I truly want you to be mindful of the resources that your brain has to allocate to your body during the day, knowing that it's not unlimited. How are you nurturing and taking care of yourself? And Dr. Barrett talks about emotional granularity, and she coined this term in research. And it's accurately reading your internal emotional state. Remember, I don't know when it was, last year at some point, I spoke about kind of not ignoring micro emotions. Micro emotions is not a thing. It's something that I use to help me understand the concept that we experience so many emotions in very short periods of time. If you just think about the morning routine that you have with your kids, you can feel happy, love, you know, you experience all these pleasant emotions with them in the morning when they wake up. And that maybe lasts a couple minutes, because then it's time to get dressed and they don't want to. And then all of a sudden you switch from pleasant to unpleasant, maybe high energy to low energy, because already you might not have the patience anymore for what they're doing and saying. And pleasant and unpleasant switches back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, to the point that you're leaving your home and you've probably switched, you know, 4, 5, 6 times, who knows? And then you're in your car driving to work and you're feeling stressed, right? That word. And that word means you have your, if you think of your body budget being, you know, a cup, you know, we talk about our cup being empty. If you've already allocated all your resources, no wonder you're depleted. So we need to be mindful of what's being, you know, what's happening with that body budget, so that we could remember that we need to fill it up, fill back that cup. How? What matters to us? I don't have an answer for you when it comes to that. But I do know that it's important that whenever we experience an emotional situation, that we take the time to acknowledge it, but also to reappraise it, right? So if you get in the car and now you're feeling really overwhelmed by the morning, but it's done, and it was about your child not wanting to get dressed, and it was about your child wanting to put on their shoes when you're trying to leave the house, or your child not wanting to go to school and you're fighting with them again. Once you're in the car, you need to consciously somehow, if you can, if it's little moments, not if it's something very big and heavy, but if it's those little moments, you have to consciously let them go or reappraise your situation right now and say things like, right now, that moment is done. I'm going to take a deep breath and know that this moment is over with and I'm going to work and I'm excited for what I have to do at work today, or I'm excited for the lunch, I'm meeting a friend at lunch today, or I'm going to work out once I get to work or at lunchtime, whatever it is, allocate those energy resources, right? Think about how you're going to add more if you feel depleted. How can you do that? And maybe it's about walking around the office for 5 minutes and just like mindfully looking around and reminding yourself that morning is done with and you've got this now. You're in a different environment. You're safe if you have to remind yourself that. And now's the time to change the sort of allocation of those resources to work, to being with colleagues, to friends, to whatever it is. I really hope that rethinking how we look at emotions and not just saying, I'm anxious, I'm mad, I'm sad. It's not that I want everybody to never use those words again. It was just really like a brain exercise, a way of rethinking emotions. And I hope that it helped you, because I think that if we see it as pleasant and unpleasant and we really focus on how we're feeling in that moment, we will do what we need to do in order to support our needs in that moment. I hope. That is my hope. And this is just the first part of how emotions are made and how I'm interpreting and trying to change what I'm reading into some advice for you guys. I hope that this was helpful. I really, really do hope that you were able to take something from this. But I do want you to remind yourself how important it is for you to be aware of what your body is going through and what your mind is going through. We cannot continue to be on autopilot, because that's what's going to just, you know, continue this cycle of, I lost my shit and I don't know why. I went from 0 to 100. I felt some rage. Once we start tuning into our minds and our bodies, maybe we'll realize that we're stuck maybe in an unpleasant emotion, whether that's sadness or anxiety or anger. Maybe we'll realize that half the time our heart's pounding, you know, faster. And if we, you know, monitor that, we might realize, wow, I had no idea that this was happening to me. Maybe we'll realize that we clench our jaws when we're mad or when we're anxious. But all I want for you today or this week is to tune into your body and to see what sort of resources your brain is allocating, right? Like to your stomach, to your breathing, your heart rate, whatever it is. Just become attuned with your needs this week. That's all I ask for you. Well, that's all I ask of you. All right, my dear friend. Thank you for listening to the Curious Mom podcast. We have this month, we have Amy Morin at the end of the month, who's the author of 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. And she has a new book about couples, so you don't want to miss that. And I'm speaking with a researcher next week where we're talking about men and mental health. Whether you yourself are a dad or a grandpa or an uncle, or if you, even if you're not, you need to listen to this episode, because the conversation that I had with this researcher, Matt, is a really important one. And I hope you are there to listen next week. Have a good week, everyone. Bye.